Welcome to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall, a discussion of blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, and why it matters to you.
Hey, folks. Welcome into Beyond the Blockchain here with you on a Tuesday night live from FM Talk 106.5. Got a lot going on tonight. AI is real and changing as fast as any of us can keep up. Our institutions, workplaces, minds, and our oldest stories are all running 30 years behind it. Joining me as always, the Johnny Quinn.
Heidi-ho.
Johnny, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. I am living my best Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Tuesday life.
Tuesday life. I like it. Johnny, we've got a lot going on this week. We're going to talk about Apple throwing in the towel on AI.
Yes.
Your grandma being scammed.
Again,
by a robot version of you. We've talked about this before, but it's worth bringing it back up again. Trump and Bernie agree on something.
A miracle. It's a miracle.
It's
hell has frozen over.
Yeah, I'm worried about that one. And last week we told them during Beyond Blockchain, we'd fill them in on the Pascagoula story. We intend to do that tonight.
Very last. Looking forward to that. There was a lot of research on that one.
Yeah. Well, thanks for doing all that. Johnny, what's going on in the news this week?
Well, it looks like Apple has married Google. So we got a story about Trump and Bernie. How about Apple and Google?
Well, you know what's weird is Google is also heavily invested in both.
Oh, of course.
The new SpaceX IPO and Anthropic.
They have their tentacles in many things.
Wow.
So this was Tim Cook. You know, is it Baldwin County, Tim Cook? Is he from Fairhope or Baldwin? Is Bay Minette?
Robertsdale
had his last keynote at the Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference. That's the one you always saw where Steve Jobs had his turtleneck and, you know, his glasses, and he would, you know, do the iPad, the everything. So he had his final keynote, and he was talking about the new Siri and the Apple Intelligence built on Google Gemini. So really, it's kind of like Coke announcing their flagship product is made by Pepsi.
Yeah.
And the CEO of Coke cried at the announcement. He actually got a little tear there.
You know, they're sitting on a pile of cash.
Piles. Yes.
I guess they're just going to wait for the bubble to burst after these IPOs and then swoop in.
So Tim Cook, his last act is handing the keys to Google. I'm sure Steve Jobs is rolling in his grave. So while we're talking about the most valuable company in the world, this is something a lot worse happening to probably your Gulf Coast grandmother. The senior AI voice clone scams, they just went nuclear. AI only needs 20 seconds of audio. We've talked about this. They clone your voice. They do all this phishing stuff. So what happens is you get a phone call, and it's your voice to your grandmother. I'm in prison, and it's not you. It's an AI bot. And the idea is it's really happening a lot. We talk about it a lot. And the idea is you have to protect yourself. And Scott, how do we always say to protect yourself with these types of scams?
Yeah, the easiest way to do that is to have a family password that is a dynamic password that changes. And don't text it to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And keep everybody up to date on the family password.
So have family dinner on Sunday night and pick a word. I like the word. These are pretty cool. They gave some suggestions. Pelicans or crawfish.
Okay.
Or, you know, tapioca. So, you know.
Something, you know.
So, you know, so if your kid calls you at 3 a.m., you better know it's your kid, because you don't get that money back, by the way. It's really tough to get that money back.
Yeah, once the money is gone,
yeah.
Even when the FBI gets involved, the odds of them recovering the money is pretty small, because it's almost always overseas scammers.
And now we have Trump plus Bernie agree on AI. And mark this date, Trump and Bernie Sanders agree on something. Bernie proposed a 50% public ownership stake in OpenAI, Anthropic, and X. Sam Altman took a one-hour private meeting with Bernie June 3rd. Trump on Air Force One on June 5th said it's a beautiful thing, a partnership in this revolution. He's talking about some government equity in these companies. I will tell you right now, as a classic liberal, true libertarian, I don't want the government in any business at all. I think this is nonsense.
Well,
I understand why they're doing it, but
my kind of consternation is at what valuation are they buying in, and what are they getting for their money? Because we're not just going to take this from them. Bernie, I think, wants us to take it from them. Trump is saying we're going to invest. Well, if they want 50% of a $1 trillion company that's $500 billion. Mm-hmm. And where is that money coming from?
Right.
And now what? We've propped up these companies and picked the winners and losers so that no one can ever possibly compete with them because the government is going to ensure that their investment wins? I just don't like it.
Well, when Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are saying the same thing, the establishment has lost the room. When Trump's own AI czar is calling this a stupidity tax, there's something going on, man. There's a lot of, I think Trump's just kind of talking and Bernie's kind of agreeing because they're all kind of scared of AI, but Trump knows we can't let China win. I don't know. It's a mess.
It's a mess.
We got a lot of new technology is very disruptive.
Yeah, and a lot of that also goes into the implementation of the product. So we're going to go on a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about how to solve the AI implementation problem by taking you all the way back to 1890.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks, welcome back into Beyond the Blockchain. Here with you on FM Talk 106.5, joined as always by the Johnny Gwynn. Johnny, before we went out to the break, kind of gave a teaser about taking people back in time so they could understand AI implementation. And give me just a minute to set it up, and then I want you to deep dive in here, okay?
Bear with us. It's quite long, but we have to have the setup to have the discussion.
Yeah, and it's worth it, right? So it's a little longer than some segments, but it's worth it. So I'm going to take you back, Johnny. It's 1890, okay? An American factory has just installed a giant steam engine in the middle of the factory. There's one long drive shaft that runs through the entire building. Belts and pulleys are attached to each machine, but remember, just one drive shaft. And the factory wasn't laid out by what it did. It was just laid out by what the drive shaft and the belts could reach. Then electricity arrived. So here's the next thing, right? This is like the AI comparison. We've got electricity. It's going to change the world. They yank the steam engine out, drop an electric motor, hook it up to the exact same drive shaft, keep everything else exactly the way it was. And productivity barely moved for 30 years. Johnny, go deeper into the story.
All right, we're going to start from the very beginning. Picture this. It's 1890. You step inside a noisy, dusty American factory and something feels off. There's a massive steam engine rumbling in the basement or right in the middle of the floor, spinning one long drive shaft that runs the entire length of the building. Belts hang down everywhere like giant spider webs, powering every machine in sight. But here's the crazy part. The machines aren't arranged by what they actually do. They're arranged by wherever the belts can reach. The whole factory is organized around the geometry of power. Then electricity arrives. Edison, Westinghouse, the whole revolution. By the 1890s, factory owners have access to electric motors. So what do? The most obvious thing, they rip out the steam engine, drop in one giant electric motor, hook it to that same old drive shaft, and leave everything else untouched. Same belts, same pulleys, same clunky layout. For the next 30 years, productivity barely moved. Economists were baffled. They had this miraculous, cheap, clean new technology spreading like wildfire, yet the numbers refused to budge. They called it the productivity paradox. Sound familiar? The real breakthrough didn't come from more electricity. It came in the 1920s when smart engineers finally redesigned the entire factory. They ditched the central drive shaft and put a small motor on every single machine, unit drive. Suddenly the geometry didn't matter. You could lay out the space around the actual workflow, the way material actually moves from raw to finished. Single-story buildings, brighter spaces, safer conditions. Productivity didn't just improve, it exploded. Stanford economist Paul David saw this pattern coming. In his famous 1990 paper, he looked at computers and said we're making the exact same mistake. Bolting powerful new tech onto old ways of working. He predicted the big gains would arrive once organizations redesigned around them. And he was spot on. The 1990s productivity boom hit right when he said it would. Now, here we are in 2026, repeating history with AI. Companies are rolling out Microsoft Copilot licenses, custom ChatGPT tools, and AI-powered workflows for everyone. And then slapping them right on top of the same old processes, org charts, and decision-making structures, new motor, same drive shaft. The numbers are sobering. MIT's major study last year examined hundreds of enterprise AI projects. $30 to $40 billion spent in the U.S. alone. And 95% delivered zero measurable return. Only 5% created real value. The winners weren't the ones with the best models or biggest budgets. They were the ones brave enough to redesign the work around what AI can actually do. Even seasoned developers using AI coding tools felt 20% faster. The stopwatch showed they were 19% slower. They were convinced it was helping. The data told a different story. So, if your company just deployed AI tools and nothing feels any faster, you're not crazy. You're not failing to embrace the change. You're watching the steam engine with an electric motor phase play out in real time. Here's the uncomfortable truth and the massive opportunity. The huge AI productivity boom we've been promised is probably still a decade away. But the companies, teams, and individuals who start redesigning their work right now, they're ridiculously early. Startups and small outfits without legacy baggage are already pulling ahead, while big process-heavy organizations are stuck spinning their belts. The folks bold enough to rip out the drive shafts today are the ones who will dominate tomorrow. That's the story of technological revolutions. And the quiet revolution happening right under our noses.
I just think the steam engine analogy with electricity makes so much sense to what we're seeing now. And it's better than the analogy I've used before about somebody dropping one computer inside of an office and telling everybody to check their email. Right. Because this is truly an idea of rebuilding the way you do the work around the new tool.
Okay. How big was steam energy for evolution of industry and human existence?
Gave us the railroad.
And then electricity, which I can't imagine anything without electricity.
Oh yeah.
And now we're comparing it to AI, which I think is one of the first analogies. We've been talking about this for 2 years now. This is one of the first analogies that actually says how big that really is. Like the internet was big,
yep,
but AI is even bigger than the internet.
Yes.
So again, everyone I think kind of understood that long historical and modern perspective that I gave.
Yeah.
Because they've been handed Copilot or Gemini or Anthropic at their office in their job with very little training and said, use this in how you're doing things anyway.
Right.
Which is that's the thing that we keep reading about. Fortune 500 companies, 95 of them don't see any production, don't see any profits. And what did we say about that last week? It's because they're not doing it. They're literally just like handing a monkey a machine gun. Yeah. And just saying, go with it, dude. It's dangerous. You can shoot yourself. You can shoot your other monkeys. It's just a bad setup. You have to have a plan for this powerful, powerful tool.
Yeah, and essentially asking people to do the same thing we've always done, just use this tool instead, does work in limited capacities. But when you're trying to deploy something across enterprise, it's just not going to work that way.
Well, again, right? The idea is, think of, we have talked with Meducate AI. We've talked with people who have these EMRs and EHR systems that have been built and patched and built and patched based on DOS, based on Fortran and COBOL and all of these old layers of languages that have just been built, 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 and built. And then we built something that was really on the newer languages, right? Yeah. Python, C++, and that kind of stuff. And then what we're using, and the idea is they just don't really connect very well with these patch
legacy systems, right?
Yeah.
So I think what you're going to see is the people who utilize AI the best will be the startups that didn't have a pre-existing workflow to fix.
They built their foundation at, like, with the newest engine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that's going to be, and then you're going to see the companies that are in the top 5-10 percentile in the world are going to be the ones that are smart enough to adapt and to accomplish this rebuild.
How great, how much of a luxury would it be if you got to say, we're not inheriting a CMR or a Salesforce, something that you're like, hey, we've been using this since like 2011.
Right.
That is, but not most companies that I know of around here, none of that. That's not the way it works. It is, oh, we're using the same system, same POS system we used in 1998.
Yeah.
And I get it. And then also the other thing is there's a lot of good salesmen out there selling these AI products. Like, I get great stuff every day. This is going to solve all your bottlenecks. This is going to solve everything you're doing. And the idea is I want it to be a magic bullet.
Right.
And there is no magic bullet. You have to learn the system inside. I've been using Claude for, what, 3 months now?
Yeah.
I'm just now going back and reading those blogs and those YouTube are like how to set up Claude properly because I shortcutted everything.
Yeah.
And again, I'm the one that's like teaching or trying to teach everybody right now. Take your time, learn the guardrails, learn the systems, step one, step two, step three. But it's so much fun with that shiny new toy.
Oh, yeah.
And I was working with it, but not near as good as I could have been working with it.
Yeah, it's like anything, right? So I was talking to a friend of ours who's a surgeon, and we were talking about the dangers of AI, right? And I said, well, it's just a tool. Just like a scalpel in your hands can save someone's life. Scalpel in somebody else's hands.
Cut somebody's throat. I always say that about the match. A match can light a fire to save your life in the wilderness and cook food and purify your water. They can also burn down the whole darn forest.
Right.
So it's how I use that match.
it's the only thing that we're discussing here is the proper use of the tools.
And the other thing I love too is this Paul David guy. That's why he just passed away like last year at like 87.
Yeah.
MIT. He wrote this paper in 1990, man. And I mean, you were a lot younger than I was in 1990, right? Like I was in college in 1990. All yeah. Right? I didn't think about the idea of like using electricity wasn't profitable for corporate America. That sounds so antiquated to me. Yeah,
it doesn't even seem like it makes sense.
It doesn't seem like that's real. But obviously it is. You're at a paperboard. But it took 35 years for electricity to show its profitability and its usefulness in our economic system.
It took like 100 years or longer for someone to invent the curved piping underneath your toilet to make it where it wasn't a health hazard to have indoor plumbing.
Yes, because it would shoot straight up.
Yeah, the noxious fumes would come back up from the sewage. And so just by making that curve in the bottom of the plumbing, it holds just enough water to trap the gases. It's like we could have had indoor plumbing a long time ago. This guy came along and was like, no. This is how we fix that.
That's, again, we keep thinking we're this evolved creature, and then we realize we really aren't as brilliant as we think we are.
Well, which will lead us directly into conversations about disclosure later.
Oh, right?
We think we're so smart.
Right. Oh, no, we're just ants.
Yeah,
we're just ants in an ant farm.
At best.
Look, I mean, I am really... I am getting immediate benefit out of my company, out of my workflow. I've never finished a song ever. I've written 4 songs with AI as my co-writer. And some people say that doesn't count. I'll say I don't care. But I am writing just as much as with this amazing collaborator that I am.
Right.
But I will tell you, I am starting to see how it's affecting my critical thinking.
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting very lazy. I used to be an amazing speller until autocorrect came around.
Sure.
And now I can't spell rhythm.
Well, we're going to rhythm on out to a commercial break here. But, you know, I think you got a point there, and it's something we need to pay attention to.
Well, next, my favorite segment, next segment is, what are you working on AI this week?
Perfect. See you in just a second.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain here with you on a Tuesday night with the Johnny Gwynn. Johnny, one of our favorite segments. You know, we talked about building your workflow new from AI. Well, in this segment, we'd like to talk about the new things that we're working on. Tell us what you've got going on. I've got a little small project I just recently started, but I want to hear what you've got going on first.
Well, weeks ago, I talked about how I created a co-writer and an editor for me for a book that I'm working on that's based on a true story out of Isle of Battery in the 1970s.
Right.
Well, I finished the manuscript.
Nice.
That was 2 weeks ago, so I have... Part of my AI is also a writing coach. So the writing coach said, we've worked on this enough. We need humans to read this.
Yeah.
So I sent it to 5-6 different humans. They're called beta readers. So okay. I have beta readers and alpha readers. Alphas are more like proofreaders and editors and that kind of stuff. These are just people that I trust saying, do you like this? Do you understand the story? Is there anything missing? So my process is going to be, they read the book. I have 5 questions that my AI writing coach from the book has helped me formulate. Mm-hmm. They will get that in an email. I will have 2 in my back pocket. So when we meet, I will record them, my beta readers, get the 5 questions they all get. That's called a baseline question. Mm-hmm. Then I'll have 2 extra. And there'll be more questions that come out of it, well, things they say.
Sure.
I record that. I put that into my transcribers that I use for all my podcast transcribing and analysis. And then I will do all of that feedback will be wrapped in all together. So I don't remember what I want to remember. It remembers everything. And then we'll collate it. We'll categorize it. We'll source it out and use that information to help me do my next level of my manuscript before it goes to the alpha readers. So it really is another way of using the feedback, but it's not biased feedback as in what I want to remember or I want them to say. It's no. It's everywhere they're saying. And the idea is let's put all this out. Let's categorize. They're not going to even say what was the most repeated feedback, what was the most unique, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that way it's more of giving me a true full picture of the feedback that I get using all the things that I use, computers, podcasting, recording, AI transcription, and then my ability to also use the analysis myself, because there are certain non-negotiables that I'm not going to change in that book no matter what, but I do want to hear back from a reader because I am blinded at being the person who wrote the book.
I think that's a wonderful way of using the tool to light a fire or cook your food and not burn down the forest.
Hopefully, and I have talked to people about this, I'm going to lean into the idea of I used AI to help me write this book because the idea was, the idea is if this did not exist, this book would not exist.
Right.
It sat in a notebook of mine for 10 years, all my research, the memoir that I have from someone that was a part of it, everything. I didn't know how to go past the first page after I started writing.
Right.
I did the research, no problem. So AI allowed me to finish the project and do it in a way that is competent enough to put something out that I really think I would enjoy to read. And that's all I want to do. I want to make something that I would enjoy being entertained by.
Right. And that's, you know, I think that's an important part of this is these tools that we're using, if it makes you happy to do it that way, do it that way. And if it makes you happy to write everything pen and paper by hand and have carrier pigeons fly it off to to a publisher like they did in 18 whatever. I mean, the thing that's always fascinating to me is when people start drawing a line at technology.
Well, it's fair. I'll use
the word processor to write a book.
Right.
Right. And I'll use spell check and Grammarly and all that. And that's okay. Right. And then I won't use this.
Right.
Because this is where I finally draw the line. That seems silly to me. Right. Like, you've got to incorporate the tools at your disposal to do the very best job you can.
And I will say this, there was still a moment. I've read this book so many times on paper because I can't really read properly from the screen.
Yeah,
I mean, I can read an article. I can read a blog,
sure.
Right? I cannot sit there and devour
the reading comprehension is tougher.
Right, and also note-taking, right?
Yeah.
But I will tell you, there was a lot of me sitting there with a glass of bourbon in my hand, just like a real grizzled writer, working with a pen and a red ink pen and a pencil and working through every line of that thing. And then finding out I can't scan it back in. I have to go back into the file, the document, it's just a regular WordPress or document, and make all those changes myself. Because it's the only way to do it where you can make sure every one of those changes get in. So when someone says you didn't collaborate with it, I will say you're out of your damn mind and I don't care. The other thing is it can't write dialogue worth garbage. It cannot write dialogue. I wrote every single bit of dialogue because it just doesn't understand what I hear and see in my head, but also the dialect and the history that I know of this area.
Right. Well, those are things that it can't scrape the internet for, right?
Not really. No, you end up with Hollywood Southern accents.
Right.
Which are terrible.
Yeah.
How about you, Scott? What have you been working on this week with AI?
So I had this idea the other day to create an app. And essentially, it's an app that I would want to use. And I'm real big into the founding of the country, right? The founders, these people that came to Jamestown.
Under 30 years old, which is so crazy.
Yeah. And just kind of, I'm going to go carve out the frontier, right? These frontiersmen, like Daniel Boone, just fascinated by all that. So anyway, I thought, what if I could create an app that would take the data from my phone and then almost give me like a scouting report the next day for my pioneering expedition? Here's the ground we covered yesterday. Here's what we've got to go do tomorrow. To basically give you encouragement and reassurance every day. And if you had a bad day, not beat you up. You know, I don't want it to be like shame on if I, you know, this weekend I watched college baseball too many hours, right? I didn't put in the steps I needed to put in, do whatever. It was also raining, so whatever. But because it can access my weather and all that too, you know, it might come back with a report that says, you spent a day around the camp yesterday, recuperating and recovering. The weather was pretty rough. It would have been hard to get out there and pioneer today anyway.
So it's like modern analytics, but in the voice of like
pioneer wisdom. Yeah. Like frontier wisdom.
It's almost like a version of Oregon Trail.
Yeah, that's kind of part of where my thinking is, right?
If anybody doesn't know, it's a video game that used to be like a written video game of like you and your journey across the great America, across the Oregon Trail, and everyone died of either a snake bite or dysentery.
Yeah. Or they tried to fjord their wagon and drown.
Yeah, and always Indians got a hold of you. So, yeah, you know.
So it's
kind of like that.
It's kind of like that vibe. And like I said, these things are getting to where, you know, if you're not crazy on the database side, on the back end, the build out is not that complicated anymore.
But my thing is taking something that's, there's already things that, like, I have activity fitness stuff that tracks everything I do and then gives me reports and stuff. But it's very much a clinical kind of language and a voice. But the trick is, how many pairs of tennis shoes are out there in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's that, how's the swoosh look and how's the suede? I like the idea of, like, okay, I'm not creating anything that's not already out there. I'm just giving it more of a personality.
Yeah.
And I really like this personality.
And I'm creating it for myself. And if other people happen to like it, bonus.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm creating it because this is a tool that I want in a way that I feel like I can encourage and inspire myself.
But again, those tools are there in front of us, and that can be done. And it can be done without having to spend loads and loads of time and money.
Yeah. Well, just one of the ways to use the tool to help you rather than burning the whole place down.
All right, Scott, when we come back, it's beyond the blockchain, and we're going to talk about Pascagoula, early UFOs back in the day, the Steven Spielberg movie coming up, and other things that we can say are believable or not believable with the UFO phenomenon.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
All right, folks, welcome back into Beyond the Blockchain. It's time for Beyond, where we talk about the weirdest things that have come across our desk during the course of the week. We left off last week with this story about Pascagoula. And some of these stories, Johnny, you go, I don't know if I believe that, right? Like, I don't know if that's
true. I want to believe a lot of it.
I want to believe, yeah, it's like from X-Files, right? So, and here's the reason I got to believe this one. It's because when I was a child, this came up in the news as like a recycle. And my dad was like, oh yeah, I saw that. I was there. He used to live out by the state lines.
October 11th, 1973.
Yeah. All right. Give us the backstory.
Okay.
What happened in Pascagoula?
October 11th, 1973, which is only 35 miles from here, by the way. Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker, two welders, were fishing in the Pascagoula River and reported a craft with three figures in it they saw, and it paralyzed them with a 20-minute encounter. Crazy thing was they went to the police, and of course they thought they were drunk, but the sheriff put them in a room with a hidden microphone, and they never broke the story, and they passed polygraph tests. So, and Parker died in 2023, but, you know, it's still been said it's a pretty credible encounter, UFO encounter.
It's one of the most credible, and we're going to talk about Spielberg and Disclosure Day, but, you know, we're going to look back on a lot of these encounters, not just in recent history, but through ancient texts and through the Bible. And we're going to start to put more pieces together in a way. This is part of the reason I believe we live in a simulation. You're telling me that the entire course of human history, I'm alive during AI and the alien disclosure. What are the odds of that, right?
Yeah, pretty low. Again, we're lucky to be born in this country. I'm going to go ahead and say that.
You didn't drop me into a boring episode of something, right? Just straight to the...
Right
to the pinnacle.
Yeah, this is an action. This is an action film.
Yeah, no kidding. Every other week is a once in a lifetime event.
You know, again, the Spielberg thing is Mobile has such a connection to the UFO phenomenon. With this is where Close Encounters of the Third Kind was created.
Maybe one of those offshore bases is off an island.
Well, I would not put anything past anything off of Dolphin Island. So, but I mean, 1977. Right?
Yeah.
Close Encounter of the Third Kind, which, again, I loved it. I think I was 7, 6 years old. Of course, it just opened my mind, like, whoa, this is amazing.
So it would have had to been filmed in 75 or 76.
75, 76.
So just 3 years after this encounter.
And again, Richard Dreyfuss, you know, the whole thing is the early days of UFO, and they didn't make it spoofy. They didn't make it like a 50s, you know, invasion of the blob or anything like that. It was like they almost shot it like a kind of heartfelt story with a little bit of like a documentary feel to it.
Right.
I mean, action adventure film. And then Emily Blunt in this new movie said, this is literally from 77 to 2026.
Yeah.
Is an extension of that film, of the idea of, hey, here's this weird thing we think might be real and might be a bunch of kooks.
Yeah.
To the idea of, what if everybody now knows
this
is real?
The film we're talking about is called Disclosure Day.
It comes out this Friday. Yep,
Spielberg's first movie in 4 years. And I saw a quote from Spielberg where he said, and I think you touched on it, but when he did Close Encounters, he thought, wouldn't it be great if people thought this was real? And and his quote in the pressers leading up to this one is, isn't it going to be great when the people know this is real?
Yeah. Again, we've been trained.
Oh yeah. Everything's a psyop.
I keep saying this thing. We keep saying this over and over again. It's like, people are going to go, what do you mean? No one's going to say, oh my gosh, I'm not going to believe in God anymore because there's UFOs. It's like, now people are going to go, oh, UFOs, ETs. Yeah. Yeah. I knew that was that way years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the question is going to be, okay, aliens are real. Do I have to go to work tomorrow?
They got some heavy hitters in this movie, man. Emily Blunt, Colin Firth. Here's the plot. A whistleblower forces global UFO disclosure. And the tagline, the summer, the truth belongs to 8 billion people. So, okay.
We'll see.
Again, you know.
I'll tell you what, I'll go see it.
Yeah, I haven't seen a movie in a theater in so long, man. I'm trying to think of I want to say Star Wars, like the last Skywalker, like the last one that whatever got panned pretty good.
Yeah.
And this is how long ago this was. Like a kid, we went to their birthday party for that, and I think he's graduating from the Naval Academy this year. That's how long ago it was. Oh man, that's so crazy.
That is crazy.
That is really time. Just talk about a wormhole. I just went through a wormhole right there.
Yeah. What was the first movie you remember seeing in a theater?
Star Wars.
Okay.
Yeah. First. Well, that's not true because I remember the Disney films Escape from Witch Mountain.
Mm.
Oh, your young one might love that.
I bet she would.
It's really good. I had such a crush on the girl in that thing. Woo!
First movie I can remember seeing in the theaters is Back to the Future.
Yep. Okay. Solid film, man. That one still holds up.
That's a good way to start.
That holds up today.
Yeah.
It does. It's paced well. It's done so well. It's heartwarming. It does the comedy. It's solid.
Saw where they, back to Spielberg and George Lucas, Star Wars, you know.
You know it doesn't hold up?
What?
E.T.
Oh, yeah.
I can't watch
it. I haven't watched it.
And the way, you know, they changed it. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, horrible.
Oh, during the woke movement?
I don't know when they did this, but something about Disney, or I think maybe when Disney took it over or bought all the whatever they did with it, they took it from where, like, when the government comes to get E.T., they all got guns.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, what the military does. Yeah, what the government does, right?
Yeah.
They come in heavy-handed. And the idea was by the time they redid it, it was like, they had like flashlights. It wasn't real guns. You know what I'm saying? They changed.
They come in with flowers and chocolate.
Well, again, this idea of like, oh,
we're from the government.
Oh, we're here from the government.
We're here to help.
We'll be your buddy when we you know, disappear you.
Yeah. That's hilarious. I did not realize they made that change.
Well, I know they did it because E.T. was a ride at Epcot.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, there was a scene where you're going, like, you're on the bike.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like Elliot. There's a little E.T. on your little cart thing. And we go through the woods. There are, like, security guards that don't have they've got flashlights. And I was like, this is lame, dude. This is so lame.
That's pretty lame.
But again, I hope Spielberg hits hard on this.
Meanwhile, Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, they're over there doing what pirates do.
Raping and pillaging.
Yeah, it's like, no, that's the whole idea.
They changed that too, I think around 2019, 18. They did change all that too. You can't have fun anymore, Scott.
Yeah.
You just can't do it.
Apparently not.
Well, look, I do believe that there has been things in the sky. I'm a little... I don't know. That story about that thing in Brazil. Was it Brazil or Argentina?
Oh, you're talking about the little sphere?
No, it's the thing. No, it's the one where, like, they did that documentary called, like, The Age of Disclosure.
Oh, yes.
Where the guy is, like, interviewing, like, these people that are, like, 70-year-old, like, not actors. They'll talk about when aliens landed in their little village.
Yeah.
And, like, it's so believable.
Have you seen the clip of this tribe that had been a non-contacted tribe? And they started talking about aliens, and they showed them a picture of them, and they said, oh, the ant people. Yeah, they live underground.
The ant people. Oh, the subterranean.
Yeah, they said, yeah, those are the ant people. They live underground. They were talking about the grays.
Yeah. That's so funny. I think they're the insectoids.
Well, they were specifically talking about the grays.
Grays, reptilians, insectoids, and the Nordics.
That's at least.
Okay, here's our homework for next week. I want you to watch They Live.
Okay.
Okay? Which is interesting as heck about how aliens have infiltrated our culture. And then we'll try to go to the movie theater this weekend. Maybe go together. And we'll give a review of Disclosure Day next week.
I like it.
All right.
All right.
Sweet.
See you next week.
Bye, everybody.